Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Epochs, where once again I should be continuing my narrative of the decline and fall of the Roman Republic and the narrative of Caesar in Gaul. Now, this will be the last episode I'll do about Caesar in Gaul because we're near the end, really. And after this, finally, I'll cut back to Rome. I'll go back a few years and go back and tell you all about what's happening in Rome, because quite a few years have passed since Caesar was last in Rome for any amount of time whatsoever. And I'll pick up the story with Pompey and Cato and Cicero and all the various things, all the gang wars with Milo and all that sort of thing that's going on there. So that'll be next time. So this is the last episode I'll do all about Caesar in Gaul, and we reach the crescendo of events, really. The rebellion of Vercingetorix and his final defeat. Because if you remember last time, Caesar suffered a relatively minor defeat at Gergovia. So Caesar obviously won't be happy with that. Very, very, very rarely is ever turned back or defeated or suffers any sort of reverse. So when he does have a small one, he's not going to be able to have that. He's not going to let that lie. And Vercingetorix's rebellion was a very big, very serious one. So Caesar really couldn't just let that go. So let's continue the story. We're still in 52, the campaigning season of 52 BC. And what Caesar really wants, what Caesar nearly always wants, is to have a big set-piece open battle, because he knows he'll almost certainly win that. Caesar's very good at all sorts of insurgency and counter-insurgency-style warfare, but when it comes to a stand-up ding-dong battle, he's even better at that. So that's what he usually wants, and that's what Vercingetorix has until now refused to do. You know, he's stayed holed up in his camps or in his towns or on a particularly fortified position and refused to meet Caesar in open battle. But all that is soon to change. I'll let Caesar himself pick up the narrative. He said this, quote, "At the Allier, the Aduians Viridorimus and Epidaurix asked for an interview with Caesar and informed him that Litaviccus had gone with all the Gaulic cavalry to try and seduce the Aduae from their allegiance. It was essential, they said, for them to get there before him in order to keep the tribe loyal. By this time, Caesar had many proofs of the treachery of the Aduae and felt sure that the result of letting these men go would be to make them revolt all the sooner. However, he thought it unwise to detain them, lest he should be accused of high-handed action or give an impression of being afraid. Before they went, he briefly reminded them of his services to the Aduae, in what a feeble state they were when he received them into alliance, cooped up in their strongholds, stripped of their lands, deprived of all their allies, forced to pay tribute and submit to humiliating demands for hostages, and how he had not merely restored them to their previous position, but raised them to a height of prosperity, prestige, and power that they had never reached before. Bidding them pass on this reminder to their countrymen, he let them go. Situated in a strategic position on the Loire was an Aduian town called Noviodunum, to which Caesar had sent all his hostages from the various Gallic states. His stores of grain, public funds, a large part of his personal luggage, and that of his troops, and numbers of horses that he had brought in Italy and Spain for use in the war. On reaching this town, Epidaurix and Viridorimus heard the latest news about the Aduae, that Litaviccus had been received at Bibracte, one of their most important towns, and visited by the chief magistrate, Convictio Litavis, and a large number of councillors, and that an official embassy had been sent to Vercingetorix to conclude a treaty of peace and alliance. This was too good a chance, they thought, to be missed. Accordingly, they massacred the garrison at Noviodunum, and the merchants who lived there, shared the money and horses, had all the hostages taken to the magistrates at Bibracte, and carried away as much grain as they had time to stow into boats, the rest being thrown into the river or burnt. The town itself they thought they could not possibly hold, so they burnt it to prevent it being of use to the Romans. Then they set about collecting troops from the neighbourhood, placing detachments and pickets along the Loire, that's a river of course, the Loire River, and making demonstrations here and there with their cavalry to intimidate the Romans. In this way, they hoped either to starve them out or to force them by stress of famine to retire into the province being Transalpine Gaul, more southern France, in other words. They were greatly encouraged in this hope by the swollen state of the river, the result of melting snow, which made it to all appearance quite unfordable. Caesar decided that he must act quickly, as usual. If he had to build bridges, a battle might be forced upon him, and in that case, it would be better to fight before enemy reinforcements arrived. The only alternative was to alter his whole plan of campaign and retire to the province, a course which some of his frightened officers thought unavoidable. But there were many reasons against it. It was undignified and humiliating. The route was a difficult one, and above all, he was anxious about the legions under command of Labienus, who were separated from him. Accordingly, he made a series of extraordinarily long marches by day and night, and astonished everyone by appearing on the bank of the Loire. The cavalry found a ford good enough for an emergency. All that was needed was for the men to be able to keep their shoulders and arms above water, so as to carry their shields and weapons. Cavalrymen waded in upstream to break the force of the current, and, as the shock of Caesar's appearance unnerved the enemy, the crossing was effected without loss. After provisioning the army with some grain and a quantity of cattle that were found in the neighbouring fields, he marched towards the country of the Senones. Meanwhile, Labienus, leaving the draft recently arrived from Italy at Agedincum to protect the baggage, started with his four legions for Lutetia, a town of the Parisii, situated on an island in the Seine. When the Gauls knew of his approach, large forces assembled from the neighbouring tribes, and the chief command was given to an Aulercan called Camulogenus, who, although enfeebled by age, was called out of retirement to this post of honour on account of his unrivalled knowledge of warfare. Camulogenus noticed a long stretch of marsh which drained into the Seine and rendered a wide area almost impassable. Encamping nearby, he prepared to prevent the Roman troops from crossing it. Labienus first tried, under cover of a line of mantlets, to make a causeway across the marsh on a foundation of fascines and other material. Finding this too difficult, he silently quitted his camp some time after midnight and retraced his steps to Metlocedum, a town of the Senones, situated like Lutetia on an island in the river. He seized some 50 boats, quickly lashed them together to form a bridge, and sent troops across to the island. Such of the inhabitants as were left in the town, many had been called up to the war, were terrified by his unexpected attack and surrendered the place without a fight. After repairing a bridge recently broken down by the enemy, Labienus crossed to the right bank of the river, marched downstream to Lutetia, and encamped near it. The enemy, informed of this by refugees from Metlocedum, sent orders to burn Lutetia and destroy its bridges. They then moved from their position by the marsh and encamped on the left bank opposite Labienus. By this time, people were saying that Caesar had retreated from Gergovia, and rumours were circulating about the insurrection of the Aedui and the success of the general Gallic rising. Gauls, who got into conversation with Roman soldiers, said that Caesar had been prevented from continuing his march across the Loire and compelled by famine to return to the province. The news of the Aeduian rebellion encouraged the Bellovaci, who had already been meditating revolt, to mobilise and make open preparation for war. Now that the situation was so much changed, Labienus saw that he must completely revise his plans. He no longer had any idea of making conquests or attacking, but was only concerned to get his army safely back to Agedincum. On one side, he was threatened by the Bellovaci, reputed the bravest fighters in Gaul. On the other, Camulogenus, who had a well-equipped army ready for action. And Labienus's own legions were separated from their reserves and their baggage, by a great river. Confronted suddenly by such formidable difficulties, he realised that only resolute action could save him. Towards evening, he assembled his officers, urging them to execute his orders with energy and care. He placed a Roman knight in charge of each of the boats which he had bought from Metlocedum, and ordered them to move silently 4 miles downstream in the early part of the night and wait for him there. He detailed to guard the camp the 5 cohorts which he considered least reliable in action, and told the remaining 5 of the same legion to start upstream with all the luggage shortly after midnight. Making as much commotion as possible, he also requisitioned some smaller boats, which he sent in the same direction at high speed. His loud splashing of the oars, and then himself moving quietly out of camp with the other 3 legions, and marched downstream to the place where he had ordered the main flotilla to put in. The enemy patrols posted all along the river were taken by surprise, because a sudden heavy storm concealed the approach of the legions, and both infantry and cavalry were quickly ferried across under the superintendence of the knights in charge of the boats. Just before dawn, the enemy received several reports almost simultaneously, that there was an unusual commotion in the Roman camp, that a strong force was marching upstream, that the sound of oars was audible from the same direction, and that a little way downstream, soldiers were being ferried across. This news made them think that the Romans were crossing at 3 different places and preparing for a general retreat in alarm at the revolt of the Aedui. They therefore divided their own troops into 3 sections. 1 section remained on guard opposite the Roman camp. A small force was dispatched towards Metlocedum with orders to advance upstream as far as the boats had gone, and the remainder were led against Labienus. By dawn, the whole of the 3 Roman legions had been taken across and were in sight of the enemy. Labienus urged them to remember their long-standing tradition of courage and brilliant success, and to imagine that Caesar, who had so often led them to victory, was present in person. He then gave the signal to attack. At the first onset, the right wing, where the 7th Legion was posted, drove back the enemy and put them to flight. On the left, where the 12th Legion was, the enemy's front rank was killed or disabled by missiles, but the rest put up a determined resistance, and it was clear that not a single one of them had any thought of flight. Camulogenus was there in person, encouraging his men. The issue still hung in the balance when the 7th Legion, whose military tribunes had received a report of what was happening on the left, appeared in the enemy's rear and charged. Even then, not a single Gaul gave ground. All of them, including Camulogenus, were surrounded and killed. The detachment left on guard opposite Labienus's camp, on hearing that a battle was being fought, went to lend a hand and occupied a hill, but could not withstand the charge of the victorious Romans and joined their fleeing comrades. All who could not escape into woods or hills were killed by the cavalry. On the completion of this action, Labienus returned to Agedincum, where he had left all the baggage, and then rejoined Caesar with his entire force. End quote. So clever and tricky manoeuvres by the Romans once again. Labienus himself is very good, tricking the Gauls into splitting up their army. Never a good idea, really. Particularly not if you're outclassed. But that wasn't Vercingetorix, was it? So the story continues. Quote, "The defection of the Aedui was the signal for a further extension of the war. They sent embassies into every part of Gaul, and used all their influence, prestige, and money to induce other tribes to join them. The possession of the hostages whom Caesar had left in their keeping gave them another means of exerting pressure. By threatening to kill them, they could intimidate tribes which hesitated. They asked Vercingetorix to visit them and arrange a plan of campaign, and when he came, claimed the chief command for themselves. He refused their demand, and a pan-Gallic council was summoned at Bibracte. There was a full attendance of tribesmen from all parts. The matter was referred to their decision, and they unanimously confirmed the appointment of Vercingetorix. The chief absentees were the Remi and Ligones, who stuck to their allegiance with Rome, and the Treveri, who remained neutral throughout, because they lived at a distance and were harassed by German attacks. It was a bitter disappointment to the Aedui to have their claim of leadership rejected. It was with great reluctance that Epidorix and Viridorimus, young men who regarded themselves as having a great future, took orders from Vercingetorix. The various tribes were required to send hostages to Vercingetorix by a certain date, and the whole of the cavalry, numbering 15,000, was ordered to concentrate immediately at Bibracte. He said that he would content himself with the infantry which he had in the previous campaign, and would not tempt fortune by fighting a pitched battle. With his great cavalry strength, it would be quite easy to prevent the Romans from getting corn and forage. "All you have to do," he concluded, "is to destroy your corn crops without hesitation and burn your granaries, knowing that this sacrifice will make you free men forever and rulers over others." He then commanded the Aedui and the Segusiavi, a tribe living on the provincial border, to supply 10,000 infantry, which together with 800 cavalry were placed under command of Epidorix's brother and detailed to attack the Allobroges. At the same time, however, hoping that the memory of their recent defeat by Rome, that was in 61 BC, so what, 10 years ago nearly, still rankled in the minds of the Allobroges, Vercingetorix tried to seduce them from their allegiance by sending secret agents and envoys who offered bribes to their chiefs and promised the tribesmen that they should be made rulers of the whole province. In another direction, the Gabali and the southernmost clans of the Arverni were sent to attack the Helvi, while the Ruteni and Cadurai were to devastate the country of the Volcae. To meet these various assaults, a force of militiamen amounting to 22 cohorts had been raised in the province itself by the general Lucius Caesar and was posted all along the threatened frontier. The Helvi, who chose to offer battle to the invaders advancing across their borders, were defeated with heavy loss. Their chief magistrate, Gaius Valerius Domnaturus, son of Valerius Caberus, being among the casualties, and were compelled to take shelter behind the walls of their strongholds. The Allobroges posted a closely linked chain of pickets along the Rhone and protected their frontier with great vigilance. Meanwhile, Caesar found a way of remedying his inferiority in cavalry. Since all the roads were blocked and no reinforcements could be got from the province or from Italy, he sent across the Rhine to the German tribes, which he had subdued in previous campaigns, and obtained some of their cavalry, attended by the light infantrymen who always fought among them. As their horses were unsuitable for the service required of them, he mounted the Germans on horses requisitioned from the military tribunes and other Roman knights serving with him, and from the time-expired volunteers. During all this time, the Gauls were concentrating the troops which had been operating in the country of the Arverni, and the cavalry levied from all over Gaul. A large number of cavalry had now been assembled, and while Caesar was marching through the southeastern part of the Ligones' territory into that of the Sequani, so as to be in a better position for reinforcing the provincial troops, Vercingetorix established himself in three camps about 10 miles from the Romans, summoning his cavalry officers to a council and addressing them. So these are supposed to be the words of Vercingetorix himself, who was supposed to have said, "The hour of victory," he said, "has come. The Romans are fleeing to the province and abandoning Gaul. But although this will assure our liberty for the moment, for future peace and security, we need more than that. Otherwise, they will return in increased force and continue the war indefinitely. So let us attack them on the march while they are encumbered with their baggage. If the whole column of infantry halts to come to the rescue, they cannot continue their march. If, which I feel sure is more likely, they abandon the baggage and try to save their own skins, they will be stripped of their supplies, without which they cannot live, and disgrace into the bargain. As for their cavalry, not a man of them will dare to stir outside the column. You ought to know that as well as I do. To encourage your men, I will draw up all my troops in front of the camps and overawe the enemy." So Vercingetorix feels like all the momentum and energy is with him, and that the Romans are entirely on the back foot, and it's only a case of pressing the issue. Well, the story goes on.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.